Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a euphoric and still slightly husky sounding Coleman Had a Dream podcast. I am currently sat in Cardiff Airport, ready to fly back to the Netherlands after a fantastic trip home to see my family and friends, obviously, but crucially, see Wales destroying Croatia 2-1. I'm sat here with Ruth, well, not literally, but she's in a coffee shop in Oregon. How are you, Ruth?
Metaphorically sat here with Ruth. Yeah, no, good, good.
Exactly.
Also had a busy weekend, but in a different way. We had an annular eclipse here, which is not like a total eclipse, but it's where the moon sits in front of the sun and you get that ring of fire outside.
Oh yeah,
So
yeah.
we got that on Saturday morning, which was amazing. So yeah, been a good weekend all
Well, there you are, ladies and gents. I bet you didn't tune into a football podcast,
round.
think you were going to hear some scientific stuff
Some
about an
astronomy.
eclipse, which I exactly astronomy. That's the word. I might still be hungover. Yeah. So we're going to talk to you about the Gibraltar game very, very briefly, but obviously focus on the Croatia game. What a fantastic night that was, Ruth. Do you manage to get to watch the Gibraltar game in the end?
I actually listened on the radio. I was at work. Pretend I was at work.
Big nods and smiles.
I had my little earbuds in, going for it, watching, listening along, and then obviously caught up with the actual actually watched it later. But I got to
Yeah,
enjoy
yeah.
more of it live than I was anticipating, so that was good. That was just a very sort of professional and competent
Yeah.
use of a friendly, really.
I agree. It's interesting, obviously, but like pre-match, I put out a few tweets saying how ridiculous I thought the lineup was, given how important what was coming was. As is very often the case, I was proved spectacularly wrong. We both were, in fact, given our pre-match squad predictions. But I do maintain that I don't think it was worth the gamble that Rob Page took. But I do recognise equally that it all paid off. So in hindsight, it was a good decision. It worked out well to give players minutes, people like Moore. And Nico Williams, some game time, which obviously proved to be good decision making by Rob Page as time progressed. Four good goals in the first half, Ruth. I would say the Nathan Broadhead one was probably the pick of the bunch.
Yes, no, I would agree with that. I think my concerns and your concerns beforehand were what happens if, so it's a risk if someone gets injured. And I think it's easy to take that off the table when, well, you look at poor Wes Burns. You know, that could
Yeah.
have been Kiefer Moore. It could have been Nico Williams. So I think my fears beforehand still stem from that concern and the fact that you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how these things are going to
Exactly.
play out. And I think when players are so crucial, I think it's a very real fear that something like what happened to Wes Burns is going to happen to someone that's very, very key to the squad. I think obviously the fact that we are starting 11, you know, was unaffected. And the people that needed some game time got some game time, then it's all in the win column. I don't think that stops the fears that we had being real fears and
Yeah,
real concerns.
I agree. And it was still a gamble, and because it didn't need to be a big tackle or someone getting a late catch or something. It could be something relatively innocuous, like what it was with Wes Burns, where he landed awkwardly, and that could have happened to anyone. So I do maintain that our fears, sorry, were justified. Although my tantrumy tweets pre-match probably slightly influenced by the 4 pints of Murphy's that I had had well, by the time that came out. I enjoyed the game, and it was fairly stress-free. We did everything we needed to do, and I would say it's good to see certain players. I thought Charlie Savage, for example, was the standout player, and it was good to see these players have an opportunity to play in a competitive game where we were as you say, did a very professional job, and I thought Charlie Savage was the epitome of that benefit.
Yeah, no. I think both friendlies have been used, both the Korea, South Korea and this one, they've been used about as well as they could have been used.
Yeah.
I think South Korea put us in a kind of good frame of mind going into that window. And then this one was much more about being at Wrexham, getting some minutes in a few people and blooding a few players. You know, Savage stood out, but I thought Lowe played well. I thought there was just, you know, good debuts all round.
Yeah. Obviously, whilst that is a was a good exercise in the end that it transpired, we are really here to talk about what happened on Sunday night. What a fantastic game.
So here we are, pre-match before Wales against Croatia. Everyone's enjoying the hospitality that the cottage has to offer. James, pleasure to have you on board with us. You dare to give us a prediction about what you think the score is going to be tonight?
I think Wales will have 19% possession and get absolutely stuffed, but we'll come away with a 1-1 draw. Kiefer Moore, late on, header from a corner.
1-1 draw, James is saying. Do you think a draw is good in FXC, or do you reckon we need more tonight?
I think no matter what we want tonight, I think we're going to end up with a... Yeah, I agree, a 1-1 draw. I think it'll be a shit game. But as you say, I think just about get a goal, and probably be a really rubbish goal as well, but who cares? It'll be a 1-1 draw.
Bainesy, can you give me any cause for optimism? Do you think this is the start of our 3-game winning run?
No. The main thing I hope is that we're set up in a way that allows us to compete in midfield. So that's where the game's going to be won or lost. I really do think that we're going to lose 2 or 3-0, and I don't think we're ever going to really be in it. I hope I'm wrong, but that's really what I feel is going to be the reality.
Well, captain positivity there. Joey, obviously, I'm sure listeners of our podcast will be excited to hear your voice back on again. As long as there's 3 cliches minimum, people will be happy. Do you think we are also going to lose 3-0, or are you going to be positive?
No, I'm going to try and be positive. I think after Croatia's defeat at home to Turkey, there might be an opportunity for us. They haven't lost back-to-back away matches in a good few years. They have. They've done doubles. And I'm going to go with a Brooks-inspired 1-0.
Excellent stuff. Paul O'Brien. Colin, I know you love doing this. What is your prediction for the game today? So far, draws, loss, Joey thinks a win.
Are we saying realistically?
Yeah, what do you think is going to happen?
I hope it's one of the most boring games we've ever seen in our lives, and we win 1-0 with a controversial, if not dogged, box tapping from Kiefer Moore's ass. That's all I hope for.
Well, there you go, ladies and gents. Positivity below. I think we are going to win it 1-0. Today's going to be the day. Going to be atmosphere. People have been drinking all day. It's already a good atmosphere in town. So hopefully the stadium will be bouncing tonight. And I fancy a 1-0. Die Brooks, late winner. Up the Welsh. It's half time here at the Cardiff City Stadium. It's 0-0. Joey, I'm sat next to you, so you get to speak first. I think Wales have played well.
I can't disagree. Half press has worked well in our half. We've limited them to pretty much nothing. It is in certain respects a bit of a nothing game at the moment. I think Wales need to massively step it up in the second half, considering it's all on us. We need the win. They don't.
So to give you a quick yes or no, you said 1-1 pre-match.
I said 1-0 pre-match.
To Wales?
Yeah.
Are you sticking with that? Yes or no?
Yeah.
I didn't expect that answer. Colin, I can't remember what you said. Stop it. Can't remember what you said pre-game. But are you happy with how things have gone so far?
Yeah, Wales playing really well. I think we've nullified any of the Croatian attacks. And I think we've done well possession territory-wise. Carry on like this now for the next 20-25 minutes, and then we... Like I always say, we really do. We need the win, they don't. We have to push on after that. So I'd expect no changes at half time, and then about 60-70 minutes, really go for it.
Bainesy, thoughts on the first half?
Very good. Better than I expected. Controlled the well in midfield. First goal's massive. If they get it, could be trouble, but we need to press higher up the field. Also, I think I should have sent the equals and the...
Are we still going to win this game? Yes or no?
I said no at the start, so maybe, I don't know.
What a bell end. Well, there you go, ladies and gents. What great insight. We'll see you after the game. Wales have just beaten Croatia 2-1. It's been absolutely brilliant. And I'm stood with Finn here, who's been desperate to sing "You're Just a Shit Joe Allen," but we couldn't let him do it. How do you feel, mate? Do you enjoy the game?
Oh, absolutely ecstatic. Honestly, I think Wales played the best they've played in years. Honestly, I've never seen a performance like it from Wales in months and years. I'm so proud of the team. Come on, Harry Wilson!
So it's post match. We're in the Butcher's Arms. I am with Wales away regular Ashley. How's your evening been, mate? You've had a good time. What a fantastic result!
Well, it's been far better than I thought it was going to be. I mean, most of my friends we came to the match with, we were all thinking it's going to be 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, a loss. But actually, to win by any score, it's fantastic, and it really keeps our hopes alive. But that doesn't matter. To actually beat such a great team as Croatia at home, that is the most important thing. And we beat them quite well. So we're really happy.
I agree. I thought we played excellently. Who do you think is your man of the match? Because there were two or three people I thought. Ampadu, I thought, was fantastic tonight. I thought Rodden was brilliant tonight. I thought the way Moore held the ball up was fantastic. Obviously, Wilson got the two goals. Who's your man of the match tonight?
Well, I thought it was really poignant at the end, because as the players came past the Canton stand, which is where I go to for every game, is we were all singing Brooks for Brooks. But it was Wilson who scored the two goals. So the chant switched to the Harry Wilson song rather than the Brooks song. I thought Brooks played really well. I think he's growing into the role that I think he is going to inherit, which is from Ramsey as the creative attacking midfielder player. I thought Rodon was very strong. Ben Davis always is strong. But to be honest, all the players stepped up. They knew this was a big game, and once we got the goal, they all knew what their job was. So it was very hard to pick, but I mean, I think because he scored the two goals, you have to go for Harry Wilson. But I think David Brooks was a very, very strong player too.
A lot of people contributed. A very quick yes or no question to finish. Are we packing our bags and spending our summer in Germany? Yes or no?
I bloody well hope so.
That is the shittiest one word answer I've ever heard.
Yes.
Correct. Thank you.
Oh, here we go.
So, Wales have beaten Croatia 2-1. We are effectively the best football team on the planet. Oz, I'm going to ask you, who was your man of the match?
I think, as was discussed with our previous gentleman,
Ashley, lovely man.
Ashley, I don't think you can look past Harry Wilson. I honestly don't. There were notable performances by supporting characters. I thought Jordan James, from what I saw, did really well, given his youth and experience. Ampadu was Ampadu. But yeah, can't look past Harry Wilson.
Ampadu was Ampadu. It was the highlight of that. Colin, who was your man of the match? Don't say Ampadu was Ampadu.
I think probably it might be Ben Davis. I think he won't get mentioned at all, probably. I think everyone was amazing. Everyone did their job tonight. And it's hard to then look past Wilson because he gets the goals. But Ben Davis was unbelievable tonight in everything he did. His composure on the ball, he was up attacking, he was back defending. I think everyone had an exceptional game, apart from Danny Ward, simply because he had nothing to do. And that's fucking fantastic, and I long to see it. But I think Ben Davis might be my man of the match.
Crucially as well, and people will never say this, but I think Ben Davis has got a touch of the handsomes about him, and no one ever talks about that. One of my highlights of the game was where he played a long ball, chased his own long ball for the flick on, and tracked it all the way to the fullback on our side of the corner. realised he was never going to get the ball, but kept going anyway, and then just turned around and sprinted diagonally across the pitch. I thought it was excellent. I think it was excellent. For me, I just thought Ethan Ampadu was ridiculous tonight. And I know he didn't score the goals, but I thought every time there was any level of 50-50, he had this look on his face like he was going to murder someone if they dared to beat him. I thought he was exceptional. I thought Harry Wilson was great, lots of energy. I thought the way Kiefer Moore held the ball up was great. But for me, I thought Ampadu was exceptional tonight.
Outside of the goals, which are obviously fantastic, what was your highlight of the match?
You've asked me that question because you already know the answer. The highlight of the match, without question, was, I reckon, about 15 minutes to go, Ethan Ampadu tried to win a free kick. And successfully won a free kick. And he went down. It didn't even go down in installments. It's like he looked at the referee, waved at the ref, told him it was going to happen, and then he went down in bits. And everyone around us went mad, apart from our little group, who just turned around and shared chef's kiss with each other. Absolutely my highlight of the game. And that, and the boy Finn, who has just been heard recently, started to sing, "You're just a shit Joala Luka Modric," at which point he got scolded by me, admittedly, and five other people. Like, mate, we've been here before. It's 25 minutes ago. That was great. But it's also great to see a lot of young people at the game. It was, I could wax lyrical for ages, but my highlight of the game, other than the goals, was definitely Ethan Ampadu buying the shittest foul of all time. And it was glorious. In a word, Joey, yes or no, are Wales going to Germany?
One word.
Yep, so that's already two. Yes.
Correct. Colin.
Yes.
Well, obviously, we're going to Berlin. So book your flights, book your Airbnbs, and we'll see you there, boys. Up the Welsh.
Just wanted to mention some of the people we spoke to on the day that they've just heard on the recordings. Finn, who was the lad who was kind of stood in the row in front of us, we'd had a joke in the pub beforehand. I'm like, this is the story I tried to tell you. And when I called you at 2 o'clock in the morning, Ruth, absolutely shit-faced. There was a lad in front of us. We'd been talking in the pub beforehand. Why do Wales fans sing "You're just a shit Joe Allen" towards all of the opposition's best players? And we referenced when Kevin De Bruyne had it happen to him, and then he scored about 30 seconds later. And I think it's happened to Modric when we've played Wales recently. So we kind of had that joke in the pub beforehand. And just after going 2-0 up, this lad in the row in front of us stands up and just starts saying, "You're just a shit Joe Allen" to Luka Modric as he comes in our general area. And I just, because we'd been talking about it in the pub afterwards, we kind of laughed. And I turned around and went, "Look, calm down, son. We've all had a drink." And I didn't really think he was paying any attention, but he laughed, and his dad and, you know, the family in front of us anyway all kind of had a laugh. So he said, "Well, when can I start singing 'You're just a shit Joe Allen' to him?" I said, "The thing is, mate," he said he was 16. I said, "The thing is, in your entire lifetime, every time Wales have played a big game, pretty much they've won it. This is not my experience. We are very much of a different generation to you, my friend." So you can sing "You're just a shit Joe Allen" to Luka Modric when we're 4-0 up in the 93rd minute. Obviously, Croatia got the goal back, and the lad has kind of turned around and looked at me. I was just like, "There you are. You see, it's happening now. It's coming. I told you, this is your fault if we lose." So at the end of the game then, just as the final whistle blew, and we all kind of celebrated, and the lad in front of me turned round, just stared straight at me with both his arms wide out, and just started shouting at the top of his voice, "You're just a shit Joe Allen." It was absolutely brilliant. So I got a little snippet of recording from him. Lovely lad, lovely family in front of us. And Ashley, a Wales away regular, had a bit of a chat with him. Lovely bloke. But crucially, Ruth, I also bumped into the guy who called us the 60 Minutes of Doom podcast. Mm-hmm. As I was coming back from a half-time wee, I got a tap on the shoulder, and we had a bit of back and forth with him. And he introduced himself as the guy who called us the 60 Minutes of Doom podcast, which I thought was very nice. But yeah, it was great to meet people around and about through the day. And
that was Michael. Let's credit
that was Michael.
Michael,
sorry. That was Michael, yeah. Very, very enjoyable. Nice to see him. But yeah, it was great. It was a fantastic day. As I said, we to look at the starting lineup, Ruth, things that never happen. is that I predicted what the starting lineup would be, and I think you agreed, and our prediction was correct. That Brooks started and Harry Wilson started as well, but all both behind Kiefer Moore. That literally never happens to us, Ruth. We got something right. The world must have stopped turning.
Well, it did. There was an annular eclipse. No, seriously, I think with the injuries and the situation that we've got, I'm not sure there was a great deal of decision-making that was needed beyond people being fit, really. I think it was more about people being ready to do the minutes. Like, yeah. I don't think we could ever expect 90 out of Brooks, for example, but knowing you can bring Dan James on, I think I think it was more about trying to ensure people were ready for what you needed them to do rather than, oh, we're going to take him over him kind of situation. Yeah. So, I think there was a lot about the lineup to like. I the fact that Meppham, from what's been said and what was reported from his club as well, has very much been working to this for a date. And I think it speaks well of the relationship with Bournemouth, that they're kind of comfortable with the likes of Meps and Brooks, and for that matter, more coming in with limited time and knowing that they'll be okay. All in all, I don't think, and obviously more comfortable with the back five. I think that's been reestablished as our norm now. So, and I think it was the things that really struck me about the game sort of as a whole, Dave, was we were playing defensively very much a 5-4-1 and looked tidy doing it. I liked how Wilson and Brooks were supporting in the midfield. But then offensively, it very quickly became a 5-4-3.
Yeah.
And I think we were switching between those with a comfort level that I haven't seen before. There was just a tidiness to what we were doing.
No, I totally agree. And I thought, just briefly to go back about Meppham, I was really impressed with how he came in, actually, and contributed so well, having not played for 5 weeks. Not played at all for 5 weeks, recovered from that injury, to, obviously, as you say, to work toward that date. And I thought, in the first half, he was, you know, that was right in front of where we were sat. And I thought he looked so cool and calm. And I often say that Meppham gives me palpitations sometimes. But I thought he played really, really well, controlled what was happening around him really well, moved the ball well, read situations well, communicated with those people around him really, really well. I was really, really impressed with him, I've got to say. I thought he played excellently. And just to look at the tactics briefly as well, I think the other thing that impressed me about that was the switch, as you mentioned there, between attack and defence, because we look like two different teams, and I love that. And we haven't seen that sort of fluidity for a while. And I thought that was also supplemented really well by Kiefer Moore's very, very unselfish work. The plan was to get him to start deep and receive the ball. Push further up the pitch, but receive the ball deep. Make a run from back to front a little bit and create space in behind him. And that really worked well. And sometimes he did it diagonally and came across the pitch to receive the ball and win a header. And sometimes it didn't work. Sometimes he didn't get there first. And sometimes we didn't pick up the second ball. But very often he brought the ball down on the halfway line, having been stood on a defender, came back into play, recycled the ball well, at which point it's created space for people around him. Fullbacks got forward. Wilson and Brooks were able to get around him. And I just thought that system, they'd obviously, very obviously worked on that in preparation for this game. And it was different. And rather than doing the system we've used before, where we're basically hitting it up to Moore and hoping for a knockdown somewhere, actually, that change of plan, almost using as a massive false nine, in a sense, where he's dropping in, was really, really effective. It allowed us to get people around him. And I thought in the first half, especially, I mean, Danny Ward has another save to make, I don't think. You know, we really, really controlled the game well. And every time Croatia had the ball, it was in and around their halfway line. And we were happy to let them pass it around there. And I thought it's all well and good, you know, the outcome and picking the right players and all that. But there was a noticeable tactical shift, I thought. And I thought it was executed really, really well. And to look at the goals a little bit, that's actually where the first goal came from, again, is more coming from further up the pitch and dropping deeper. I don't actually think he won the flick on himself. I think Brozovic sliced it. But then obviously that created the space for the people around him, and it just worked so well. And yeah, real credit needs to go to Rob Page and the players for how that change has happened, but also how it kind of manifested itself in the game.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're this deep and we haven't mentioned Ampadu and Jordan James yet, who just were absolute linchpins in that whole flow. And I think, I mean, it's early days in that partnership, but it bodes well. And I think when you consider that Jordan James is 19 and is, you know, he's doing so well. Just like late in that game when he took the yellow card, you know, it's just like there's some maturity there that a 19-year-old doesn't deserve. But to go back to your point about Moore's play, I think it obviously the first goal is ultimately incredibly well taken by Wilson, but it stems from providing that out for Ward, being available, messing up in Moore's case, messing up the defender, making them think, making them be on you, and hence providing space for other people. Brooks's flick on is lovely. And then Wilson does very, very well to control the ball and finish it. So it's all just very nice play all round. And I don't think there's this notion of you can't play the long ball kind of attitude. But when it's creative like that, when you're using that long ball to put their defense genuinely under pressure, as opposed to using it to clear pressure off yourself, you're using it in a different way. You're using it proactively. And I think we've got an asset in Moore. I think Moore's play suits that very well. So it's silly not to use it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it gave us the opportunity to expose the things that I don't think Croatia are used to exposing, which is Vida definitely didn't want to come and play short with Moore because he knew he would get exposed pace-wise if he had to go back the other way. So he was the one who was sitting deep. Well, actually, that worked for us because it allowed Wilson to get forward and use his pace on him instead. And as you mentioned, the confusion of there was amazing. I've got to say, just briefly, when the ball goes through, what a flip by Brooks. But the way that Wilson chests it and pushes it into his path as he's running, like if you watch that back again, he doesn't break stride, he doesn't slow down, he's at full sprint the whole time. It's perfectly judged. And what a finish that is. But from our angle, where we were in the ground, we were at a funny angle where I couldn't tell if it was going wide or not. So it was this really weird thing where if you watch the goal back, there's like this slow rise of volume because some people on certain parts of the ground can see this is definitely going in. There's people on my part of the ground thinking, well, it's probably going to go wide. Unlucky, good effort. And then you see the net kind of rustle and, absolute pandemonium.
No, that's true, actually. When you look at it on the telly, there's almost a Mexican wave effect from what would be the goalkeeper's left end of the Canton stand across the Canton stand to Wilson's side as the angle kind of plays across. So there is this like kind of weird Mexican wave effect as people get up and start celebrating. Yeah.
It was very funny. It was very entertaining. And, what a goal. And to be in that position, everyone was kind of looking around each other and just like, well, actually, we've controlled this well. We've actually played really well here. You know, we've not created chance after chance, but we were definitely in control of that match. We may not have had all the possession, but we managed Croatia really, really well, I thought.
And there were chances in the first half as well. It's not like we was kind of sort of sitting there and then pounced on a lucky bounce to start the second half. We made great chances. Wilson's free kick in particular. I think it was Nico's drive across.
Nico's cutting in, yeah.
A drive across the goal as well. So we were creating opportunities all game. Well, maybe not at the very end, but all game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in that first half especially, we really did. But in the second half, you know, we were two or three, you know, passes away in two or three different occasions from setting DJ away. Mm-hmm. And there was one where Wilson, the ball was cut out, was a pass to him. I mean, we could have had, you know, just after we scored the second, James has had a breakaway down the left-hand side and cut in, and he's just whistled it wide of the post. You know, there was more chances for us out there, you know, in a funny way. I think 2-1 probably reflects the as a genuine, you know, balance of the game is probably fairer. But in terms of, we couldn't, you know, they couldn't have complained if we'd have actually scored three or four goals on the night just by the way the game panned out. To look at the second goal, just superb bit of football. I really massively enjoyed how the normal thing I think footballers would do in a circumstance is when the ball gets headed out, normally people from the first cross, which is from Williams, normally happen to let that roll out for throw-in, kill a bit of time, get people up the pitch. We were like, nah, we're on top of you here. Recycled the ball, gave it to James, who was in space. Perfectly weighted cross into Harry Wilson. And what a header. That, in contrast to the second, to the first goal, the angle of that was kind of perfect for us. As soon as it came off his head, we went, because we knew that was going in before it hit the net. It was amazing. But yeah, what a clever little back header as well.
Yeah, no, that was clever. There was some debate on Radio Wales about whether it was intentional, like Rob Phillips has always come off the back of his head. And it was Nathan Blake and Simon Church were on with it. And they're going, yeah, that's exactly what he wanted to do.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
two strikers kind of, they're claiming the goal very quickly. Yeah. I think your point about the interplay between Nico and Dan James, and as you said, the fact that Nico doesn't let it roll for a throw is very pointed, actually, in terms of how in control we felt. Because there have been times when 1-0 up, we have sat in a game, and sometimes it's worked out and sometimes it's come back to hit us. And I like the fact that we still had ambition. I mean, it was still relatively early in the second half, I suppose, but I like the fact that we had ambition. And as you said, we had them on the back foot and we wanted to make something of that. And if I'm remembering the flow right, I think that actual pressure in that corner came off Rodden pressing someone and the ball ricocheting out for a throw-in initially. So I like the... and there were times where... I think there was one point as well where I can't remember the point in the game, but Ben Davies was up and it was him that was pressing the goalkeeper.
Chasing the keeper.
And I think there's just... I think there was a confidence and a kind of... like a confidence and an energy and a verve to how we were playing that was really good to see. The confidence, I think, was impressive.
And I also think that reflects on the whole situation as well, you know, where we had to win that game. But because of what happened in the week, there were no two ways about it. We had to go win that game. So as a consequence, you can afford to press a bit higher up the pitch and maybe not afford to, but you have to go and exert yourself on the game and say, well, at least we did everything we needed to. On a different day, we could have been quite happy to sit in for 0-0 or something because that a point would have been fine. Whereas actual fact, we needed to go and win that. And we were on the front foot. We were actively trying to do the thing that we know we needed to do. I also think that bodes well then looking at that Armenia game in a month or so's time, because again, it feels like we know what we need to do now. There's no grey areas about this.
Yeah.
We need to go and win the game. And then I think that in a way sort of suits us because we at least know what the game plan needs to be and what we're going to try and do. So I think, you know, there's real positives to come from this. Obviously, their goal was a bit of a disappointment. It's a shame because on two counts, because it's a great save actually from Ward in the first instance that gives away the corner. But you know, the lad was actually offside when he's had the shot. So it's a shame then that they've not flagged for that, because obviously the resulting corner is where the goal comes from. And I know it's easy to say in hindsight, but in a way they would have been better off scoring there, because VAR would have turned that around. We would have had a free kick and it stays 2-0. Anyway, it is what it is. The ball's come across, obviously more. I think he's just mistimed his jump a bit. I think he's jumped a bit too soon, got under it. And I think, I don't know who it is. When I look at it back, I feel like it might be Ampadu, but I'm not sure. Someone's lost their man. So then there are two people free at the back post. Rodden has got to try and gamble on which one to mark. And it all happens so quickly that the next thing you know is in the back of the net. But again, you know, this is their only chance of the game, Ruth, really. Like, this is the only thing they've created, if you like. And that comes from our error. I think that we were just in complete control of the game. And I know there were a couple of half chances later on. But, you know, in terms of what they created, given the amount of ball they had, this was it, really, and this came from our era. So, again, I think it shows how well we played and how well we controlled the game. But obviously, a shame to concede that goal.
Yeah, no, I think I think the irony of the VAR non-role in this was quite interesting, because that was another debate.
Yeah.
So at what point do you wind this back? It was what you were talking earlier when you were mentioning Mepham and Rodden, and that you all of our games, you feel like there's been a moment where one or other of them has had to scramble. And it might have worked out well, but there's been a scramble. Mm. And there was that one moment where Ward saved and then Rodden kind of eased it past the post as well. But I think Ward's save was taking care of that. And other than that, there wasn't really any moments where that back three were kind of scrambling for something. And I think that their goal, the Croatian goal, is the closest we got to that from a numbers point of view. As you said, you know, Rodden ended up marking two. Pashalic got the goal. So I think there's some strength to take from that as well. We weren't just playing well going forward. We were playing well as a five unit at the back. And they had very limited chances. I mean, I was looking at the UEFA stats for the game and we had 45 attacks to their 18. Now, I'm not quite sure what constitutes an attack by UEFA standards, but that means we've got an attack every other minute in the game. Now, that's a hell of a rate when you consider it didn't feel like a da-da-da-da. You know, there was nothing about it that felt manic. It felt paced and it felt energetic, but it didn't feel manic at both ends. And I think that's a sign of some growth for us as well. And the tidiness was important as well. The passing success percentage were really amazing. Our accuracy was 92%, again, according to UEFA. So I think there was just a whole, and most of that, of course, has got to be Ampadu and Jordan James kind of orchestrating from the middle and keeping things flowing and keeping things calm. And I think that helped the back three not have to be rushing in and jumping in. And there's been times before where we've seen Rodden stepping up because he's felt he's needed to get into that kind of defensive midfield role and be proactive about things and then get out of place. And Nico's been guilty of that as well at times. And we didn't see any of that in this game. Against, you know, admittedly the Croatians had gaps up front in terms of who they were able to play, but their midfield was their midfield, you know, and so I think we have to take some strength from that as well.
I think it's easy to say when these sort of big teams lose and it's a shock in inverted commas result, you know, that team had a bad day and we had a best day. You know, whilst there may be an element of truth to that, I don't think Croatia actually played that badly. I just think we managed it. And I think it's easy to kind of take something away from them rather than credit us. But I thought we were excellent. And I thought we really did manage the game well. And you mentioned James and Ampadu there, who I just thought were superb. And the way James reads the game was outstanding for someone of that age and that lack of experience almost, was incredible. And his awareness of being in the right place. And him and Ampadu seem to have this natural link where they recognize one was going to go to the ball, so the other tried to pick up some space, or one of them was going to go and close down a player, the other was trying to close down what they thought was the most likely pass to another Croatian player, and it just worked so well. But James was outstanding, don't get me wrong, but I thought Ampadu was just on a different planet on Sunday. I thought he was absolutely brilliant, and it gives you, when you're in the ground, it gives you a different perspective sometimes. You can see that work rate close up. And Ampadu, I felt like it looked like there were six of him on the pitch. I felt like every time I looked up, he was just involved somewhere. I thought he was brilliant. There was a moment later in the game where he's kind of come to what would be our right-hand side and is trying to, basically he's trying to win a free kick. And he gets a tiny touch from a Croatian and he starts to fall. And as he's falling in the air, he turns his body round and he's like remonstrating at the ref on his way down. Goes around, holds his ankle, rolls around on the floor to look at the ref, and like gives the ref like the eyes, raised eyebrows, and the ref gives a free kick, and he just hops himself straight back up. He was like, "There you go, you bought that one." Cheers, pal. Off he goes, and we kind of turn around and look to each other as well. One of my friends, Paul, who would have heard on the chat pre-match, he loves anti-football. He loves things like this where people are so good at kind of slowing the game down. And I turned around and looked at him and he just gave me a big two hands chef's kiss. And it was just brilliant. And again, like for us in the crowd, it kind of took the tension out of things a bit. And it was brilliant. I thought Ampadu was brilliant. Most importantly, Ruth, I think we also need to talk about Rob Page, who I'm sure you will have seen the interviews and stuff after. We were critical of him after that June window, which I think is still justified. And I think we asked the questions, you know, about his future, which I also felt were justified at the time. But also, if you're going to ask those questions when things are going wrong, you have to turn that around when things are going right. And I think it's massively worthwhile mentioning. Not only did he make the tactical changes to get things right, he's had a lot of crap to deal with because of these Noel Mooney comments through that horrible newspaper we won't mention. And all of the things that have gone around that, he has had a shit week. But he's come across so dignified and has handled everything so professionally and calmly, but to the point where you could see when the anthem was playing pre-match, what an anthem that was, by the way, but you could see when the anthem was happening pre-match, he was visibly close to tears. Mm-hmm. And post-match, in his interview with Sean Dávez, same thing. He actually had to stop at one point because he was choking up. You can see how much it means to him, but also how much it's impacting him. So I think it's really important that we credit the manager here. You and I have both criticised him when things haven't gone well. So I think it's only right that we turn that around because he, for the second window in a row, really has got everything right, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think criticism was due after the June games. Yeah. But equally, I think praise is due now and praise is due last window. I think the whole situation with Mooney and the FAW is interesting because we're running off scraps in terms of trying to understand what's been said, what hasn't been said. But there's clearly enough of an undercurrent there that when your captain is in an interview and describes something as not helpful, and your man of the match in an interview after the game brings up comments from within. And Paige hasn't heard from the chief executive in weeks. I think that alone says something. Now, whether we're reading more into it than we ought. Owen Tidder-Jones had some interesting comments after the game, actually. He said that, you know, Mooney has a tendency to make it about Mooney. And actually, ironically, in this scenario, by making it about Mooney, he's galvanised the team. And I thought that was an interesting way of looking at it. Mm. There's clearly some disconnect there. The interview that Mooney gave to the BBC when I think he was up in Wrexham, and it's very difficult to judge it because there's no context, there's no question from the interviewer. The video just goes straight into Mooney's comments about, you know, reviewing post camps and reviewing post qualifiers. And at the face of it, that seems to me what should be happening. You should be reviewing how you're doing. It doesn't mean you're about to pull the manager. But of course, because in this context, that's how those are interpreted, then obviously the newspaper article from that newspaper, the timing of which is questionable in and of itself. But I mean, everything about that newspaper is questionable in the very least. I think there's something here, Dave. I just don't quite know to what level there is an issue. But I think that someone who's as measured as Ben Davies in a calm press conference before the game, you know, there's no heat of the moment post-match interview. This was sitting 36 hours before the game where he's describing things as not helpful. I think that says something about the relationship, and that worries me. I like the fact that it's obviously galvanised the team. I like the fact that, you know, the coaching staff came into Page's interview and stood with him, metaphorically at least. And, you know, I think the whole background noise certainly galvanised the team. I don't think they needed much more galvanising. It was a game we needed to win. We didn't have, you know, there wasn't, it wasn't an on-the-fence game. But I think there's something weird there in the relationship. And I think that has to be a concern going forward because we want to be moving forward with a more united front than we've shown in this window.
I think I will say, like, I agree with everything you've said there. I think it's worth talking about the whole Page and Rooney situation, in the sense that I think it has created a lot of distraction. It has galvanised us. I get the impression from seeing Rooney on Wales Away, he likes things to be about him a little bit. I think he's very much seen walking down the main harbour in Split when we were there, kind of waving at fans and whatever else. So I think he does gauge a lot of public opinion on how it might affect him as well, on how it makes him look. And I think there was such a big outcry on Twitter, for example, social media, for Page to go from certain corners that I think that's how we gauge the temperature of the situation almost by social media. And I think he does want to be seen as a popular person within the camp and the situation. So I do wonder if that is part of where this is coming from, is that his desire to want to be popular with the fans. I think ultimately it isn't helpful though, because we are, you know, we're at playoffs now, really. You know, this doesn't work, I know we have got the actual playoffs, but we've got two games. We've got a chance. This is in our own hands. We win these two games and we go into the Euros. It's as simple as that. So I do think that this has also helped in a bizarre way, not just to galvanise us, but because I think it has changed how we view this situation now, because everyone is pretty much back on Page's side. Even if you don't think he's the right man in the bigger picture, in the short term at least, I think people think people are on his side, and rightly so. He's earned that opportunity. And, you know, the reality of the situation here is that he's the most successful Wales manager of all time, pretty much. So I also think that he has, you know, enough in the bank in terms of what he's done for us, that I think it's only fair that he's given an opportunity to continue. So I really hope that the FAW support him. I hope that this goes away. I hope Mooney comes out and says something soon, because I think that will be really, really important for us and for the manager and for the whole situation in general. So I think it's, well done, Rob Page, ultimately. I'm trying to stay very long-winded, in a very, very long-winded way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's particularly striking, these wins, that, you know, it's a win without any of our big three. Mm. And we've been fearful of that road and that moment coming. And I realise Ramsey's injured rather than retired, but it's the first really big game we've had to face where we haven't been able to lean on any of them. And I think that's a kind of, that's a statement win in many ways, but that's one of the aspects that makes it a statement win, that we've moved forward from that time frame. We're building, and I think Page emphasized that obviously repeatedly in what he was saying about how this is a road we're a transitional period and a road we're walking. And but I think it was there was lots about the weekend to admire in terms of how forthright the players were, how together the squad was, how together the coaching staff was, the effect of the crowd, the power of the CCS when that's rocking, and playing a game without Bale, Allen and Ramsey, and playing that well. I think, you know, there's a lot to celebrate about the weekend.
I agree. I've got to say, you know, I've been to some special nights there, but that one was really something else. And the opposition and what they've recently achieved in tournaments and the Nations League, they got to the final, beat Netherlands 4-2 along the way. Like, they're a good side. And I think to humble a team like that at our place was brilliant. And it showed what we're capable of. I asked the question, which we can talk about another time, you know, does Ramsey get back in this team when he comes back? Like, do we want to change that situation and the way we've kind of reworked how things are currently going for us? So, yeah, it's really interesting. But I think we've got to... The whole point of us being football fans is so that we can enjoy these moments. And I think that's absolutely what we have to do. It's a special, special occasion, I think, on Sunday night, and something that will live with me for a long time. And the atmosphere and seeing a Morochid at the end, and the anthem was brilliant. And it was just a really, really special thing to be a part of. So I'm going to have to jig some of my life around, but I'm going to make sure I come back for the Turkey home game. I don't really know how I'm going to do that yet. It's on a Tuesday, but, you know, I'll find I have my ways, Ruth. You know this well from our days of working together. If there's a way to sneak out of something, I'm very much the man for that job. So we will see. I think we're going to have to wrap it up there, mainly because my flight is boarding, so I need to make a move to the gate. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your time, Ruth.
You're welcome. Sorry, it was all, you know, a bit tight on time, but we'll pick this up soon, I'm sure, and dissect.
Yeah,
dissect some of the wider picture stuff a little bit more would be good.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for listening. The show goes on, everybody. The show goes on. We have another big game in about 5 weeks' time, and you never know. Maybe we'll be having beers in Berlin after all. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.